Locked On NBA. The biggest stories, the local experts. Every Monday, we dig into the biggest stories in the NBA with the Locked On Podcast Network hosts. Today, we'll stop in Boston to speak with John Corrales of Locked On Celtics about the four Boston Celtics players on Team USA and their unfortunate loss to the Australian national team. We'll also speak with Anthony Irwin of Locked On Lakers about Dwight Howard officially joining the Lakers squad and what that means for this season. And lastly, David Locke of Locked On Jazz comes on to talk to me about the Team USA loss over the weekend and Donovan Mitchell and Joe Ingles' performances and form in that game. It's all coming up, the biggest stories with the local experts on Locked On NBA.
You are Locked On the NBA, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to Locked On NBA, another week. I am your Monday host, Josh Lloyd. I'm also the lead analyst at basketballmonster.com and the host of the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast. I had some international basketball over the weekend, a new signing in LA as maybe a backup center. We'll see as we discuss it later on in the show. So let's get to it. Now let's bring in the host of one of the hosts of the Locked On Celtics podcast. John Corrales is here to talk to me and to suffer through my national pride as the team USA lost to the Australian Boomers. And John, I thought I'd have you on to talk about that game over the week. I'm not going to talk about the first one. We'll talk about the second game between Australia and the USA over the weekend, because there was a lot of Celtics playing in that game. We'll talk about the game itself in a second, but the fact that there are four Celtics players who have made the final Team USA squad: Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, Kemba Walker and Marcus Smart. I imagine there's some portion of the fan base that's a little bit worried. Oh, what if these guys get injured? We've got so many guys out there. But I think the overwhelming thought should be that it's a positive for these guys to, you know, play together and really start to grow and develop that chemistry alongside Kemba Walker.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think the whole worrying about somebody being hurt, getting hurt, is overblown. Those guys could get hurt in any of their individual workouts. They're all playing basketball. I'd rather have them doing it this way with some structure, some officiating, and I think it's less likely to happen in something like this. And really, you have what you said, the chemistry, working with Kemba Walker, getting their chemistry down and learning how to play with their new point guard a month earlier than they would have normally. That's a big, big positive. It's also a huge positive to have the coaching of Greg Popovich and Steve Kerr and Lloyd Pierce and all of those guys. It's another perspective. It's another voice. And I think all in all, it's largely a positive experience for these guys.
It is interesting that we've got four of these Celtics guys on this team, which is you know, admittedly a weakened Team USA squad. But you know, have we seen anything different from these guys? We expect players like Jaylen Brown in their fourth season and Jason Tatum in their third season to take these steps forward, especially now with Al Horford and Kyrie gone. Is there anything that we've seen through any of these warm-up games that would make you, I guess, feel a little bit more, not encouraged, but what have you seen positively from those guys in particular, Jaylen and Jason, in terms of taking that step forward?
Well, I think what we've seen from those guys is just a different style of play, because they know they're on a team that's full of NBA-level players, that's full of high-level NBA players, and they were first of all fighting for a spot. Jaylen Brown was certainly fighting for a spot, and they're playing a different style. So I've seen Jason Tatum dish the ball a lot more, drive and dish, distribute, move without the ball a lot better, move faster, not a lot less standing around. And part of that is the international style of play. Part of it is the style of play when you're playing with these guys, this particular team, and when you're playing for Greg Popovich. So I think some of the elements from this, the ball movement, the quick decision making for both Jaylen and Jason, is going to be a nice thing for them to fold into their games, because I think coming out of last season for the Celtics, a lot of one-on-one stuff, especially for Tatum. He came into that season fresh off a tutorial from Kobe Bryant. I think everybody would like this as a nice kind of palate cleanser. This is the opposite experience for him. And I think Celtics fans would very much like to see much more quick decision, ball movement, distribution from Tatum to open up his overall game.
The anti-Mamba mentality is what Celtics fans are hoping to yes. see from Tatum this season.
Yes.
Let's talk about Kemba from that game across the weekend. It was Saturday, my time's probably Saturday morning, your time. Here down at Marvel Stadium, Kemba came off the bench, but he did drop in 22 points in 27 minutes in that game. I guess the prevailing thought is he's probably a little bit less of a player than what Kyrie Irving is, but different in a way. So how does he have to come in and fill those shoes that Kyrie was able to do so well? But is it just more through the locker room sort of stuff? Is it more through being that guy that is more team orientated than what Kyrie was perhaps in that later portion of his Celtics tenure?
Yeah, I think that's pretty much it. Kemba's going to have to come in and really kind of work the room, as opposed to Kyrie kind of pointing fingers a little bit towards the end. Especially, he had that blow up that he and Jaylen Brown kind of went back and forth with each other earlier in the season after a loss in Orlando. And I think for Kemba, it's going to be more bringing the team together, being that point guard that brings everybody. If something happens that goes wrong, talking to the guys. Kemba's not going to be disruptive in the media. He's not going to be saying things in the media, I think, that are going to be misconstrued necessarily like Kyrie did, or even misunderstood or hard to understand. So I think for Kemba, it's about just being that steadying force. When things aren't working, Kemba's just got to be the guy that says, okay, look, I got this. Here's what we're going to do. You do this, you do that. We're working together here, and we're going to proceed forward as a team, rather than Kyrie going off, which, I mean, that's part of his skill, right? Going off and dribbling and creating shots and stuff. But what the Celtics needed with all of this talent is somebody who can distribute the ball. And Kemba's strength is going to be working with guys in the pick and roll and making those decisions. So I just think by virtue of who Kemba is personally and as a player, it's just going to be a little bit of a smoother transition for him.
So now that Australia has a longer winning streak than the United States in basketball, are we installing them as favorites for China?
Absolutely. I mean, how can you not? To be the best, you got to beat the best, right?
Exactly.
I think that was a first of all, a killer game. Patty Mills was just
he was crazy,
unreal down the stretch. I think what we saw from the U.S. team, not to belittle the accomplishment of the Aussie team, but I don't think we saw the lineup that you would normally see down the stretch. There was no Kemba. I think Marcus Smart, when he's healthier, you would have definitely at least seen Marcus Smart out there checking Patty Mills defensively. You know, so like Marcus Smart's coming off that calf injury. So they're easing him in. He only played 9 minutes. He started. He looked good in his first stint. He didn't look so good in his second stint. I think they're just kind of easing him in. So who knows? He still might have won, but I definitely think the lineup would be a little bit different. Afterwards, after the practice, I did see that Jaylen Brown was talking about we got to change our mentality. I think there might have been after game one between these two teams, the U.S. kind of casually kept a nice lead. And I think they got a little too casual in game two. And for the Australian team, that's a huge deal. Beating the U.S. team is a major, major accomplishment. For the U.S. team, I think they might have gotten a little too, like I said, too casual. And so it's a good wake-up call. Obviously, an historic win. I definitely don't want to take anything away from it, because you still, even with the U.S. team, even with this U.S. team, you still got to play very well to beat them, and Australia did. I think Popovich might have a little bit of that Daly in that scrimmage where the U.S. team lost. Yeah, where the loss might not be so bad, because it kind of snaps these guys back into focus. You play Canada, then you go out to the World Cup. So I'm not too concerned with the loss. I think it's a great learning experience. But obviously, it's a huge deal for the Australian team, and they deserve a ton of credit for winning that game.
Yeah, it was massive for everybody down here to get that. Yeah, after losing your first 66 attempts, yeah, to get one on the board is a pretty big deal. No matter the strength of the opponent, or no matter the lack of stakes in the game, it is still good to at least show that you not only if you win, just to compete and to get over the line there with big performances from guys like Mills, as you mentioned. Of course, the World Cup is coming up, John. Lots of Celtics involved, so you'll be covering the Celtics. Impact of that over on Locked On Celtics throughout the coming weeks. So thanks for jumping on Locked On NBA with me.
You got it, man.
The NFL season begins next week, which means Crossover Wednesday will be back. The entire regular NFL season, you will get a special episode every Wednesday as the hosts from the opposing teams meet up to preview the excitement of the games happening that week. And find your favorite team wherever you get your podcasts, and be sure not to miss the NFL listeners' favorite segment. All right, let's bring in the host of the Locked On Lakers podcast. We discussed this possibility last week when DeMarcus Cousins injured his ACL, but it has apparently come to fruition. Anthony Irwin, Dwight Howard, the return, it's here. 2.0, Dwight. He's back with the Lakers.
I guess I have to eat some crow here because I didn't believe that it was actually a thing, but... You know, it turns out my low standards for expectations with the Lakers need to get lower. They need to drop.
There are so many. There is so much about Dwight. Okay, he put up okay numbers, but he's been a poor locker room guy. He's been on what, four teams in the last 4 years.
Everywhere.
Hasn't even played a game for two of those teams. Yeah, he's had back problems that have really limited him, obviously limited him to 9 games last season. He still can be effective in small amounts of time, but there's so much negativity that goes with that in terms of getting on with the team and, meetings with the Lakers' key players like JaVale McGee and Rajon Rondo. Apparently, he won those guys over, Anthony. So I guess what I want to ask you here is, how much of a key player is Rajon Rondo? No, that's not what I want to ask you. Dwight Howard... I think what we need to pay attention to, and maybe you can disagree with me on this, but so many of the leaks and the reporting that came out, there was no excitement in them. It was like, we've got Dwight, and look, but he could be gone in 2 weeks. Like, we're really stressing the fact here that this is a non-guaranteed deal, that we're not expecting anything from him. He's going to be coming in a limited role. Really downplaying it because when he comes in and he can't move, that they've sort of covered their bases in that way. Am I reading that correctly?
Yeah, it was the first ever, I wish we would have gotten a press conference from Rob Pelinka on this one, because I want to know if he could actually hyperbolize Dwight, because that's his thing, right? I want to know, would he have analogized Dwight Howard's time away from the Lakers the last, 7 years or so to, wandering in the desert for 40 years? I want to know where he would have taken that presser. But no, it's the first time I can really remember a team having this kind of stuff leaked and then immediately throwing water on it. Like, no, I promise we don't have high expectations for him. We don't think we aren't hoping to reclaim the years prior where he was a legit MVP candidate. It's nothing like that. We promise if he starts to screw anything up, we're going to get rid of him right away. And it's just, it's usually not a great sign when you have to talk your fan base into a signing the way the Lakers are trying to, and the talking them into it is nothing other than, look, if this doesn't work out, we aren't even, it's not going to hurt us that bad. It's wild. It's insane.
It's weird to me also, look, because they're putting that out there, they're throwing this cold water on it that, look, he might not even make it to October on this team. Like, who knows how it's going to work. Right. But there are so many other options they could have gone for. It feels like they've just gone, Dwight Howard's a name that people know. And that's really why we're talking about it here, because I don't think that I don't think he's coming in and starting. We've already discussed how that the players are playing the incorrect positions because it's too hard for them. Anthony Davis should be the center. JaVale McGee's a better option than Dwight Howard. And he's going to be playing this limited 18-minute-a-night role, 17-minute-a-night role. But what I talked about when I talked about that when Howard signing was official over the weekend is that if he does play those 17 or 18 minutes, that goes away from someone who's better suited. Now, whether that's pushing Anthony Davis more to the four, meaning there's fewer minutes at the four for Kyle Kuzma, which pushes him to the three, which then reduces minutes to maybe Avery Bradley or Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, or even an Alex Caruso, who is better than Rajon Rondo at this point. So it pushes someone who, or even Jared Dudley, someone out of a role who is better suited to that role than what Howard is in his limited capacity. So that's where we talk about opportunity, because, oh, it doesn't matter, he's non-guaranteed. But if he is there, and because he's Dwight Howard, and because if he they don't do what he says, he's going to, you know, go and fart in their bags or whatever he's going to do, they're going to play him, and it's going to cost that opportunity of him just being around.
Yeah, it's just, it was funny because that was the retort that I got when I was criticizing the move on Twitter, was Laker fans were saying, well, there's no risk involved. It's a low risk, high ceiling, high reward kind of move. And I'm thinking, there's no such thing as a no risk move, because by signing Dwight Howard, if it'd be one thing if they said, okay, Dwight is one of three or four camp invites at the center position because we would like to have a backup for JaVale McGee, because Anthony Davis doesn't want to associate himself with the center position over the course of the regular season. But this isn't that. Like, this is the Lakers giving Dwight any kind of a contract that could have gone to a Joakim Noah, who does more to facilitate. Even you know, when Dwight is playing the center spot, it's not going to push anybody into positions that make any more sense. Somebody else is going to have to carry that creative burden that you might not have needed if Noah was on the team. Somebody else is going to have to space the floor in the way that you might not have needed with Maurice Spates out there, you know, or Spencer Hawes, or, you know, if just by having Dwight in the locker room, you're going to be wondering about the chemistry across the team in a way that you wouldn't have to wonder about it with somebody like Salah Mejri, you know. It's just all of these. Dwight just doesn't really answer any of the important questions that the Lakers really need, other than, will our fans know this guy's name? And, you know, that's kind of how the Lakers have operated since Genie took over. It's quick fix after quick fix after quick fix. And, you know, at some point you got to wonder if these guys actually know anything about basketball, period.
That's what it feels like, just in terms of, you know, name recognition. Because, you know, you look at these, and I think Noah would have been a better fit there. But all those names you threw out, how long since Spencer Hawes has played in the NBA? Yeah, Mo Spates was playing in China last year. Dwight Howard didn't play in the NBA. Whereas you look at someone like the Orlando Magic a couple of years ago, they went and grabbed Kem Birch playing overseas and came in, and he is a very good backup center. And he's going to be, you know, probably demoted down to be the third string guy here now, behind Mo Bamba in Orlando. But they went overseas and they grabbed a guy. The Celtics this season went and grabbed Vincent Poirier over from Europe as well. And I'm not saying Poirier would have been the fit that the Lakers wanted, but just going outside of who's a name that we've seen on ESPN over the last 10 years. Like, there are guys out there. And I don't think that someone like, say, Devonte Kachok, I think that's how you say his name, who played for the Lakers summer league team, who's around the team at the moment, is going to be a better option. But at least consider that sort of a level of player, a 25, 26, 27-year-old center who's worked on his game overseas and has been putting up decent numbers and playing well, rather than these guys like Spates, who provides no defense and, you know, struggled. He's out of the NBA for a legitimate reason. Noah barely played last season, even though he played well. But it seems a lack of foresight there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm naming guys who the Lakers, like, that would have hit their standard of, hey, we've heard of that guy before. But yeah, they just haven't really shown any real creativity here. And look, maybe Dwight gets let go by the time this podcast gets released, right? maybe his first his introduction or reintroduction into the locker room, into the Lakers facility, he farts one too many times and they say, okay, that's enough. But, you know, for right now, the opportunity that he's getting is one that could have gone somewhere else. And even if they cut him, even if they get to October and he doesn't make it through training camp, well, that was still time for one of the other options that we've been talking about. That would have been time for them to actually get themselves inclined and have some momentum heading into the season. If this doesn't work out, I guess I'm just really pushing back against this idea that it's this low risk move, because I just don't think, you know, chemistry is something you want to risk ever. And that's something that the Lakers are really risking by just introducing Dwight into any of this. I think one thing that really needs to be pointed out is how little you've heard about LeBron being involved with this process. You heard that Anthony Davis apparently spoke to Dwight. You mentioned Rajon Rondo and JaVale McGee.
Key players.
Like, those are the names that we've. Right. JaVale, who is going to be now competing with Dwight for minutes, and then Rajon Rondo, who, and Jason Kidd. Jason Kidd was also involved in this, who is now competing for Frank Vogel for the head coaching job. But like the name that you haven't heard associated with this move has been LeBron James. And you got to wonder, like, is this him distancing himself from this? Is usually, you know, he would have fired off a tweet like, all right, let's get this, Dwight. You know, we're in this. We got to let's show the world wrong or something like that. And one of the, not even a Taco Tuesday invite for Dwight Howard so far. and you know, I'm still waiting for some kind of, you know, a leak, a report, or a tweet that's showing any kind of support for what the Lakers did here. And you know, if they aren't on, it's just, they need to all be on the same page. And I just don't think there's a way that you can be on the same page with Dwight Howard on the team.
It's going to be interesting to see what happens. Hey, we could be wrong. Dwight Howard actually might be useful in this backup role. That is still within the realms of possibility, but we will see how this all pans out, Anthony, across the coming weeks before the season begins. Listen to Anthony's takes on this and how it develops over on Locked On Lakers. Thanks for jumping on Locked On NBA with me.
Anytime. I think I'll talk to you next week to see what the Lakers' next crazy move is going
to
be.
I'm sure you will be ready to go for something else silly for us to get a segment out of.
Yep.
Now we bring in the host of the Locked On Jazz podcast. Of course, you know him from Locked On NBA as well, David Locke. The Utah Jazz had a couple of players in action in some international ball across the weekend. Donovan Mitchell for Team USA and, of course, Joe Ingles for the victorious Australian Boomers. Ingles, I want to start with him and Australia. We talked about this earlier in the show. The Australians are breaking their 66-game losing streak against the United States. But Ingles playing a little bit of a different role for the Australian team, really almost functioning entirely as a point guard. Is there anything in what he's doing with this Australian national team that can be, I guess, utilized for this upcoming Jazz season?
Well, they used him a lot as a point guard, predominantly with the Derek Favors pick and roll. He was equally as good with Rudy Gobert in the pick and roll. So yes, I think that that's a possibility. I mean, I think the Jazz signed Emmanuel Mudiay and they have Dante Exum. But when Mike Conley doesn't play 70 games instead of 82, then Joe Ingles, Donovan Mitchell, numerous other guys can pick up a good deal of that load.
He led led that game, the second game between the USA and Australia, which Australia won by 4 points. He led the whole game with 7 assists, had 15 points, and played 32 minutes. And it's going to be a key factor for this Australian team.
Should I flip this interview around and have you talk about what it's like in Australia and what the reaction's been and how big a deal it has been to the country?
You can ask me that. It might be interesting.
So tell us what has been the reaction in Australia to. Do the Boomers win?
Okay, so what happened is we had the two games here. The first game, it was held in a stadium, Marvel Stadium, which is a huge stadium. It's designed for Australian football, which, if all of you US listeners are unaware, it is much bigger than an American football stadium. So your, you know, field in American football is 120 yards, including the end zones. Ours is about 220 yards long and, you know, almost equally as wide as well. So it's a gigantic stadium, and putting a basketball court in the middle of it, it's going to look pretty small. There was a lot of issues in terms of leading up to the games with false advertising by the promoters and by the media here saying, you know, we can confirm that LeBron and Steph, they're all coming down to Australia to take on Team USA and beat them on our home soil. So a lot of people, and those guys were obviously never coming, and a lot of people got upset with that. And then when they got to the stadium, the seating on the ground, the court was elevated, the floor seating, which is again on the ground, there was no elevation in that, so people couldn't see anything after they'd paid $500, $600, $700 for tickets. So a lot of frustration there. But in game two, when we got the victory, a lot of that seemed to just disappear, and the elation and the jubilation, not that people don't understand it. Australia is, you know, taking on a depleted USA team who doesn't have their first choice, second choice, maybe even third choice players there in a lot of cases. And it's a game that actually has no overall consequence. But it's like, okay, well, we can maybe match it with these teams. If everything goes right, we've seen us get close-ish in the past. Could this be the first time that Australia gets a medal in an international basketball competition in the men's?
I mean, it was interesting. Lauren Jackson is the greatest women's player in the history, you know, was sending out tweets and Instagrams about just what an amazing moment it was. I mean, there's someone who gets it, but yeah. I think for the quest to legitimacy seems to have meant a lot there.
Yeah, and I think that's it as well. It's just really showing, like, people go, oh, yeah, the Boomers, they're never going to do anything. There's a lot of that sort of mentality basketball is popular here. The NBA is popular, but local basketball doesn't have the same level of appeal as some of the other sports here. And I think that it's big just to be able to get that, especially, again, you lose your first 66 games against the best team in the world. I mean, it's nice to get one over them and to get that and do it at home in front of a big crowd. It's really key for popularizing the sport, but bringing legitimacy more amongst mainstream media as well. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see if this can parlay into a big World Cup and then what that means there. And if we can take that a step further, I think it does nothing but help basketball in this country immensely.
I mean, I guess the question is, how concerned should USA be that this team's not going to win it?
I still think that they'll win it. It does put some interesting, I guess, worries into it, because there are teams in Europe who are very good. Yeah, Serbia is good. If the French team can always produce something weird at times, Spain has always. These teams aren't at the peak of where they've been before, France and Spain in particular. But with the way that the US team is, we're talking about guys who are good players, good NBA players, but they're not the, we can just go half pace and dominate. They're going to need to be putting everything out there, and it's going to make for, I think, a really interesting tournament. I'd still have the US as pretty firm favorites, though.
Well, we'll see. It'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see on Donovan and has how he handles being this much of a lead guy, because it is certainly a team that is relying on he and Kemba Walker.
Well, that is the interesting thing, isn't it, is that Mitchell is going to have to create so much on this team, along with Kemba. They brought Kemba off the bench for that exhibition game. He still played a ton of minutes, as they had Marcus Smart in that starting lineup alongside Donovan, but he's going to have to create a lot. His shooting wasn't quite there in that game. But outside of these two guys, and maybe you throw Kyle Kuzma. Oh, actually, Kuzma's out now, isn't he? Because of that ankle injury, he's not going to be playing. It's going to be these two guys having to create pretty much everything on this squad. And it is something that, I guess, if it works out in Donovan's favor, it's a real positive heading into the NBA season.
Yeah, I think that the numbers historically show that it is a positive for these players to go do these things. So I think that's a good thing. And then the second thing I think that's worth noting on this is just that if you talk to trainers, they actually generally say it's a good thing that the players are getting their run in, that their bodies are NBA ready by going through these stretches. So those two things should be good for Donovan. The pressure trying to manage being the man is going to be something that he's dealt with all of his first 2 years of his career, maybe more so with less help than any young player in the history of the game. Frankly, it's hard to find someone who's had the kind of burden he had. It's, LeBron somewhat in Cleveland, and Dwayne Wade had Shaq by his second year. And it's awfully hard to find players who had nobody else around them that could score. So he's somewhat used to it, but we'll see how he deals with Team USA.
What do you think? We talk about Mitchell and having this, getting into game shape and having these organized runs, and that's really good from a physical point of view. But if the US lose the tournament, is that a psychological problem that could lead into issues during the season? Like, we're the only team, we're the team that lost. Oh, it's on me. I was leading this team and we lost. Is there a concern with that?
I wouldn't think so, but. Yeah, I wouldn't think so. I don't see that scenario carrying over. So I'm going to go with no, but if somebody else feels otherwise, they're welcome to.
Yeah, they can obviously. Look, I don't think that is. I think it's more, if that was to be the case and they were to lose it, it would be more of a motivating factor than anything. But it is something that it is worth mentioning, as these, how many Jazz players have we got playing international ball? We've got obviously Gobert, Mitchell, Ingles. Is Bogdanovich playing?
No, their team did not qualify. Oh, that's the extent of the, three of the Conley is not Conley. Probably if he had wanted to, probably could have, I would suspect the way that roster went, and opted not to. So you have Bogdanovich and Conley not doing it. And the other primary guys are.
So there's going to be plenty for Jazz fans to watch over in China in the coming weeks. David, if they want to hear more about the Jazz, they can go check out Locked On Jazz, and they can hear you, of course, here on Locked On NBA as well. Thanks for jumping on your non-scheduled day to talk Jazz and international basketball with me.
And I think I'm going to be on Locked On Fantasy Basketball at some point doing a Jazz preview.
Yes, you're going to be all over the airways. I'm not sure exactly what day that's coming out, but it will be coming out, and you'll be on there providing all that knowledge for the fantasy basketball fans over on Locked On Fantasy Basketball.
Thank you very much, Josh. Appreciate all the work you do.
And that'll do it for another episode of Locked On NBA. Make sure you're following me on Twitter at @RedRock_Beeble and the network at Locked On NBA Net on both Twitter and on Instagram. If you could subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or on Spotify, it would be excellent. And give us a 5-star rating over on Apple Podcasts. It's a great way to support this show. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.